We want them to succeed. But we will no longer use American military might to construct democracies in faraway lands.
President Trump outlines his approach to Afghanistan. It's Wednesday, August 23rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, what to do with nuclear-contaminated water. A prominent Chinese rights lawyer is on trial. Cambodian girls have a new mobile app. Reacting to DNA tests, flying light and dark drones. It's all on today's VOA Asia. During his campaign for the White House, Donald Trump derided the U.S. war in Afghanistan as, quote, a complete waste. Late Tuesday, he outlined his strategy for U.S. involvement in Afghanistan.
Nearly 16 years after September 11th attacks, after the extraordinary sacrifice of blood and treasure, the American people are weary of war without victory. Nowhere is this more evident than with the war in Afghanistan, the longest war in American history, 17 years. I share the American people's frustration. I also share their frustration over a foreign policy that has spent too much time, energy, money, and most importantly, lives, trying to rebuild countries in our own image instead of pursuing our security interests above all other considerations. That is why, shortly after my inauguration, I directed Secretary of Defense Mattis and my national security team to undertake a comprehensive review of all strategic options in Afghanistan and South Asia.
Following President Trump's announcement, Secretary of Defense James Mattis said he has not yet made a decision on how many troops to send to the South Asian country. Speaking from Baghdad, Mattis said he is consulting with Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and will make the decision based on his plan. Trump said that he would not talk about numbers of troops or plans for further military activities, unveiling a, quote, condition-based approach to defeating terrorism in Afghanistan without going into detail. The president has approved up to 4,000 more U.S. troops in Afghanistan, according to sources speaking on the condition that they not be named. Currently, there are about 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Most are advising Afghan forces, although some are tasked with carrying out counterterrorism operations. That number is down significantly from the height of former President Barack Obama's troop surge, which saw nearly 100,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan in August 2010. Trump said his goal is to stop the reemergence of safe havens for terrorists to threaten America and make sure that they do not get their hands on nuclear weapons.
Today, 20 U.S.-designated foreign terrorist organizations are active in Afghanistan and Pakistan, the highest concentration in any region, anywhere in the world. For its part, Pakistan often gives safe haven to agents of chaos, violence, and terror. The threat is worse because Pakistan and India are two nuclear-armed states whose tense relations threaten to spiral into conflict, and that could happen. No one denies that we have inherited a challenging and troubling situation in Afghanistan and South Asia. But we do not have the luxury of going back in time and making different or better decisions.
And as he indicated, Trump in his address very publicly and directly put Pakistan on notice.
Pakistan has much to gain from partnering with our effort in Afghanistan. It has much to lose by continuing to harbor criminals and terrorists. In the past, Pakistan has been a valued partner. Our militaries have worked together against common enemies. The Pakistani people have suffered greatly from terrorism and extremism. We recognize those contributions and those sacrifices. But Pakistan has also sheltered the same organizations that try every single day to kill our people.
President Trump emphasized the United States will use a strategy combining military and diplomatic efforts to bring a peaceful solution to Afghanistan, one that hopefully would include all sides of the conflict. But Trump, without defining the limits, said the United States would go only so far in the effort.
We want them to succeed, but we will no longer use American military might to construct democracies in faraway lands or try to rebuild other countries in our own image. Those days are now over. Instead, we will work with allies and partners to protect our shared interests. We are not asking others to change their way of life, but to pursue common goals that allow our children to live better and safer lives. This principled realism will guide our decisions moving forward. Military power alone will not bring peace to Afghanistan or stop the terrorist threat arising in that country. But strategically applied force aims to create the conditions for a political process to achieve a lasting peace. America will work with the Afghan government as long as we see determination and progress. However, our commitment is not unlimited, and our support is not a blank check.
The president's address received mixed initial reviews. Afghanistan President Ashraf Ghani expressed appreciation for Trump's decision Tuesday. NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg expressed support for Trump's strategy, saying the alliance aims to ensure Afghanistan cannot be a terrorist sanctuary. A spokesperson for India's Ministry for External Affairs also welcomed Trump's pledge to confront, quote, issues of safe havens and other forms of cross-border support enjoyed by terrorists. There was no immediate public reaction from Pakistan's government, but Pakistan's interior minister told VOA that the government would be issuing a statement without specifying when. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Secretary of Defense Mattis ponders Afghan troop surge, Trump speech, reaction mixed. Chinese rights lawyer confession troubles rights groups. Filipino officials say Chinese Navy stalked Philippine area. Hyundai will launch pickup, more SUVs to reverse U.S. sales slide. McDonald's to close 169 outlets in India in franchise battle. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Authorities in Japan are trying to decide what to do with hundreds of thousands of metric tons of contaminated water being stored at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, which went into meltdown following a 2011 earthquake and tsunami. As Henry Ridgewell reports from Tokyo, plant operator TEPCO says it's safe to release the water into the neighboring Pacific Ocean, but scientists want a closer analysis of the water's radioactivity levels.
Month by month, year by year, the huge storage tanks surrounding the crippled Fukushima Daiichi plant grow in number. It is estimated they contain more than 750,000 metric tons of water contaminated with tritium. Local media reported last month that plant owner TEPCO planned to release the water into the Pacific Ocean, prompting an outcry from environmental groups and local fishermen. TEPCO says it has yet to make a decision.
One option is to release the tritium-contaminated water into the ocean. However, there are other options, such as vaporizing it, but we have not decided yet which option to take to dispose of the water. Since there may be an influence on the environment, and because there have been harmful rumors about what effects it may have on people and the environment, we are still consulting with various stakeholders before finally deciding on the solution.
TEPCO points out that all nuclear power plants around the world release tritium into the environment. It is considered one of the less dangerous radioactive isotopes, says marine radiochemist Ken Bisler of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Massachusetts. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
There's natural sources up in cosmic rays interacting in the atmosphere, And the biggest source by far was the weapons testing back in the 60s. So you're talking about adding to what's already there. If it's all released on one day, that's a very different scenario for the oceans than if it's released sequentially over the course of several years.
A purification system known as ALPS is designed to remove other more harmful isotopes from the contaminated water. Bissler says more oversight is needed.
Independently, I want to see for each tank what are the levels not only of the tritium, which dominates by far the radioactivity, but all those minor elements, cesium, strontium, that are still there to some degree.
Longer term, authorities face the task of trying to remove the nuclear fuel. Robots have recorded footage of what appear to be melted fuel rods inside one of the reactors.
Around the fall of this year, we're hoping to reveal a big plan on our future policy and the method which we will use to remove this fuel.
The Japanese government estimates the total cleanup cost, including compensation, decommissioning, and decontamination, will reach $190 billion in a process likely to take at least 40 years. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Tokyo.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. Democrats visiting South Korea strongly rebuked President Donald Trump's threatening rhetoric about using military force against North Korea. Senator Edward Markey said he introduced legislation requiring congressional approval for a nuclear strike against any country, unless the United States is attacked first. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. A court in Changsha of Hunan Province Tuesday put prominent rights lawyer Jiang Tianyong on trial, in which he pleaded guilty to charges of inciting subversion of state power and denied that he had been tortured by police. But Jiang's wife and rights groups denounced it as, quote, another show trial, saying that they find it hard to believe that Jiang has confessed under his own will. Video clips of what the court called an open hearing were posted on the court's official Weibo account for public viewing. In his closing remarks, Jiang was seen to have made a public confession to his alleged crimes. While asking for a lenient sentence from the judge, Jiang added that he hopes other rights activists can learn from his lessons. Maya Wong, China researcher of Human Rights Watch, tells VOA Jiang's trial resembled those of many other rights activists, some of whom were forced to confess in exchange for release while on bail, while others, like lawyer Zhou Shifeng, still received a heavy 7-year sentence after having pleaded guilty.
It's very difficult to believe that he had confessed under his own free will. I think what it shows really is the authorities' increasing abuse of the judiciary. Of course, the Chinese judiciary is long known for being controlled by the party.
The Hong Kong-based researcher further argued that even the more pro forma aspects of these political trials, such as some access to family and open trials, are done as signs of the authorities' deepening crackdown on human rights defenders. During the hearing, prosecutors accused Jiang of having issued more than 33,000 Twitter posts before 2009, in 214 of which he was said to have attacked the government with a language that incites subversion of state power. He was also accused of having accepted interviews by foreign media, including VOA, to smear both the judiciary and government while having supported other rights defenders to fight for their causes. Both Jiang and his defense lawyer raised no objection to all accounts of accusations. The court announced that it will hand down a verdict on a later date. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. India's Supreme Court has ruled the controversial practice of instant divorce is unconstitutional and un-Islamic. The judgment is being hailed as a huge victory for India's Muslim women. The court asked the government to frame a new divorce law, which would make the practice illegal. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for great stories and features. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. A group of young Cambodian girls recently took part in a mobile app competition for girl coders in California. Traveling from their home country to participate in the global competition, their story offers inspiration for other girls around the world to consider a career in tech. VOA Sofat Sung reports from Silicon Valley.
Who doesn't love discount?
That's the pitch made by these Cambodian girls at the Technovation competition in Silicon Valley.
Let's fight poverty by using our app. Don't find customer for your products, find products for your customer.
They're 11 and 12 years old, traveling across the Pacific to present their app, which allows artisans to sell their crafts online.
We want to increase employment for Cambodians, so there will be a reduction of Cambodian migrants to work in other countries, reducing poverty through making incomes and providing charity to local Cambodians.
To participate at Technovation, girls from around the world had to build a mobile app that addressed a UN development goal. The Cambodian girls picked poverty.
The first thing you're gonna see is our logo.
Globalization has boosted Cambodia's economic growth, especially the tourism industry. Globalization has also created greater economic inequality and competition. The girls think their app can help.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
At their young age, no one expects these girls to solve such a pressing issue as poverty, but their participation highlights another issue. Relatively few women work in technology. Whether it's because of a lack of access to education, information, or female role models, competitions like Technovation aim to reverse that trend.
For the first time in history, technology can really help girls have a strong voice and help us have a society that has equality.
Most of the Cambodia team come from underprivileged backgrounds, but had support from teachers, mentors, and family. Now they are becoming role models themselves. Cambodian-American Pauline Sain is program manager at Google. She was 23 years old when she got into technology.
Look at them, they're here in Silicon Valley, and there's going to be so many people who will aspire to reach this stage and also inspire other people to get involved in technology.
So we participated in a lot of.
After watching the male CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, speaking at the closing ceremony, do the girls believe that the tech giant will one day have a female leader?
Yeah. Yes.
Whether that will come true or not, they have themselves already become the youngest role models to inspire others, one girl at a time. Sofat Sung, VOA News, Silicon Valley, California.
Developing at this hour in Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has welcomed North Korea's decision to reduce its belligerent rhetoric in response to new sanctions by the United Nations Security Council. Earlier in the day, President Trump imposed sanctions on Chinese and Russian companies and individuals involved in business deals with North Korea. Stay up to date with VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, one of the great things about getting your DNA tested is that you can find out if you have predisposition to all kinds of diseases. VOA's Kevin Enix reports new research suggests that even if people are armed with genetic information to help them make good health decisions, that doesn't mean following through will be easy.
Researchers are discovering genetic components to all kinds of bad behaviors, things like nicotine addiction, alcoholism, even obesity. So you would think that people who learn about their genetic risks for disease would alter their lifestyle. But new research from Cambridge University says that's not really the case.
It's a lot easier to be sedentary. It's a lot easier to eat an unhealthy diet in today's society. So moving those behaviors with just risk information, it probably isn't enough.
One DNA testing company founder agrees.
We need to be able to observe people over time. We need to be flexible about how we change the interventions, and we need to tailor those to people.
But the research also clearly shows some people do change. One Harvard University doctor who advises companies like Helix says change comes usually when the DNA test is the first decision in a commitment towards a more healthy lifestyle.
It depended more on the experience of the testing rather than the message that they were getting from the testing. That's an interesting nuance. It was almost as if just going through the experience of sending away your saliva and getting your DNA information back, the entire experience sort of motivated people. It got them thinking about their health. It got them thinking about risk.
Ali Manzi is a personal trainer who says changing unhealthy behaviors requires constant attention.
They're not looking at the big picture. It's just day to day, like, oh, just this one piece of cake, or I'm just going to skip this one workout. And it's these little pieces at a time, and they're not looking at how their small choices are affecting their overall health and lifestyle.
She agrees that it's just easier to be sedentary, no matter what your DNA test tells you. The study shows that no matter what your DNA says, breaking bad habits, even if you know they can hurt you, is an incredibly hard thing to do. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You may have seen them flying around. Drones, those small flying machines with cameras mounted on them, they become easily accessible to consumers. Scientists, police, and businesses have found often life-saving uses for drones, but these relatively low-cost flying machines can also be weaponized. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from a recent Chemical Sector Security Summit in Houston on the light and dark side of drone technology.
These flying machines have become a modern-day blessing and a curse.
The thing that, you know, can kind of keep you up at night is somebody using it to harm people. We've seen that already.
There's actual cases in the United States and in other places where people have brought in drugs or guns to prisons, and they drop them into the inmates. In certain areas in the Middle East right now, they're using them as weapons and dropping small explosives onto people.
The technology as it is growing. It's going so fast that we often find ourselves playing catch up to the technology that's out there.
But there are ways of preventing these threats by attacking the electronics inside the drones.
They're essentially electronic devices that rely in part on GPS. So if you think about that, you can spoof a GPS system. You can use an EMP pulse or an RF pulse to disrupt the communications from the driver or actually the onboard electronics and then basically fry the electronics.
On the flip side, drones can also have life-saving benefits.
Like any technology, there's the yin and the yang. There's the dark and the light.
In the chemical industry, drones are being used to inspect structures to replace people when doing dangerous work. The Shell Deer Park refinery near Houston started using drones within the last year to take these pictures shown during a security meeting of the chemical industry.
At a big site like mine, where we have superstructures that are almost 400 foot in the air, I'm not having to get somebody lifted up some way. I can put that drone up there, get a great visual of what needs to be done, and then decide how we respond to that event.
A growing number of law enforcement agencies within the U.S. are also using drones to investigate and clear freeways faster, and in cases such as search and rescue.
You can see the body heat, maybe of a child, whereas people walking across a field may never see them. And this has been proven multiple times worldwide.
The technology is continuing to advance. Sophisticated sensors such as night vision, methane detectors, and X-ray capabilities can be placed on drones. Researchers are even looking at drones the size of a dragonfly.
Probably along the lines of some Department of Defense and high-end research is to make them mimic small insect size. Therefore, you don't pay any attention to insects outside, so you wouldn't pay attention to that.
Drone researchers say it will become an arms race to develop methods of preventing harmful drones as people continue to use these machines for the good. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We thank everybody around the world who's been tuning into our program, including everyone in Tainan, Taiwan. listening via Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung-Rung Christian University. Thanks so much for joining us today. You can also catch our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download us as a podcast. You can also stream our program from VOA Asia Facebook Daily or our website at voanews.com. We invite you to write to us, too. We'd love to hear from you. Send us a message via Facebook, or you can write to us at VOA Asia at voanews.com. Our thanks go out to director Tracy Carter and engineer Dan Crafton for helping us get this show on the air, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird, part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.